Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what motivated Zamenhof to create Esperanto? ?2017 marks the 100-year anniversary of the death of the creator of the international language Esperanto, and has been therefore declared by UNESCO to be the year of L.L. Zamenhof. Zamenhof was a Polish-Jewish medical doctor, inventor, and writer. He's most widely known for creating Esperanto, which is the most successful constructed language in the world. Roman Dobrzyński, a Polish Esperantist, has written a book based on interviews with Zamenhof's grandson, the only member of his family to survive the Holocaust. The book, La Zamenhofstrato, or Zamenhof Street, was originally published in Polish and shortly thereafter in Esperanto, and has been translated into many languages, including French, Portuguese, Lithuanian, Italian, Japanese, and Korean, among others. Mr. Dobrzyński recently presented the Spanish translation of the book, La Calle Zamenhof, at Centro Sefarad Israel, with the participation of the president of the Spanish Esperanto Federation, José Antonio del Barrio. We spoke with Spanish Esperantist and translator Alejandro Pareja about Zamenhof and Esperanto.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, Alejandro. Mm-hmm. First, you're a translator by profession, and I was wondering if you could briefly tell us how you became interested in Esperanto.
Well, I heard about Esperanto, I think, when I was a very little child. I mean, I always knew something about Esperanto. But it's a curious story because I was in Madrid's restaurant flea market, I found an old book, an old grammar, published in Spain in 1934. That was in the 90s. So I bought that book for 100 pesetas or something. And little by little, I started reading it. And later, a few years later, 2-3 years later, when internet came out, I browsed the net. I realized that Esperanto actually worked. So I didn't believe it. So I saw it working in the net, in internet. So there were people chatting in Esperanto, writing in Esperanto. So I took the book I bought. I studied it. And well, that's the story. So when I was felt ready, I went into the Esperanto chat rooms. I used to chat in Esperanto with a little dictionary in one hand, the keyboard in the other hand. And that's how I learned Esperanto.
Did it take a long time to learn?
It took months. It doesn't take years. If you really study a bit, you can learn it in months. And if you find someone to chat with, to practice it, so much better.
Okay, well, we'll talk later about the language itself. Mm-hmm. But first, I would like you to tell us about Zamenhof. Mm-hmm. When and where was he born, and what was his family background?
Right. You know, we're commemorating this year the 100th anniversary of Zamenhof's death. That's why we're having the Zamenhof year. And Zamenhof, his family was originally Lithuanian Jewish. But he himself called himself a Russian Hebrew. And he was born in Bialystok, which is a town that's now Poland. And then it was at the part of Poland that was under the Russian Empire. So he called himself a Russian, but he can also be considered a Polish person. And later on, the family lived in Warsaw, I think, yes.
When was he born?
He was born in 1859, mm-hmm. and he died in 1917. He was only 57 when he died. If you look at his pictures, he looks like a very old man, almost decrepit, because he had such a very hard life.
What languages did he speak, and what made him so interested in languages?
His first languages were Yiddish and Russian. His mother spoke to him in Yiddish, and his father in Russian. So those were his original languages. But then, as he grew up in his own family life, his first language was Polish. But he always said that his first language was Russian, but that Yiddish was closer to his heart because he learned it from his mother. So that always counts for something. And later on, apart from Polish, he became very fluent in German, and he also learned French and Hebrew. And at school, he learned ancient Greek, Latin. Well, I suppose he wasn't very fluent in that, but English. English was quite a revelation for him because it has a simple grammar. It opened his eyes for his later work in the development of a simple language. So, according to my notes, I think he was fluent in four languages and pretty fluent in five languages more.
Well, that's very interesting what you say about English. It does have a very simple grammar. I mean, there are other things that are difficult about it, but the grammar is simple, especially compared to the other languages he spoke. I mean, Polish and German are so much more complicated than Russian, I think.
That's right. English verbs are very simple. So Esperanto verbs are based on English verb, I would say. But there's other aspects, such as I think the way the word formation is a bit agglutinative. So I think it's based in German. But yes, when he learned English in secondary school, he realized that a simple language was possible, I think.
So when did he create Esperanto, and what made him do this?
Well, Esperanto was a work of all his life. He started when he was very young. Let me see. He had a first project in 78, in 1878, when he was still in primary in secondary school, and he called his project Lingua Universala, which is not Esperanto. You know some Esperanto. That's not Esperanto. That's something like, sounds a bit like Esperanto, but it's a first project. It has little to do with the later development. And he sort of published it. He showed it to his friends at school. And then he went to study. When he went to study in Moscow, medicine, his father wasn't happy about his wasting his time with such a thing, such a project, and people would think he was crazy. It was inadequate. He had to think of his future. So his father took his notes on the Lingua Universale and burned them.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. When he came back from Moscow, he was desolate. But in the long run, that was positive. He had to rework it again. Okay. He had to create it from scratch again, rethink it. So he developed it over a number of years. That made it a more elaborate, more complete language.
Why did he think that a universal language was so important, especially an invented universal language?
All right. By the time there was a universal language, there's been many projects of not universal language, but planned languages, created languages, artificial languages. We like the, in Esperanto, we call it plan lingvo, a planned language. And by then, you probably heard of Volapük. Volapük, it was created a few years earlier by a German priest, Schleyer. And Volapük had some success, but it was a complicated language. And I think Samenhaus' motivation for creating a planned language was that he lived in a very complicated society. He lived in a town that was part of the Russian Empire, was Polish. There was a large Russian population. There was a large and powerful German population. So there was constant quarrels among the locals. There was hate There was hate, and there was differences that were based upon language.
Really?
Yeah.
So he thought that the different ethnic groups would get along better if they had a language in common.
Yes. And in that town, I mean, I suppose the top stratum of society, it was, I don't know, the Russians or maybe the Germans. Then there was the Polish, there was others, and the Jews were pretty low, even if there was a family of teachers and doctors and whatever, but they were pretty low. And Zamenhof was a very interesting person. Apart from his creation of Esperanto, he was a good man. He was a really good man. He was a saint in a way. He had these ideals of comprehension of human understanding, and even if he hadn't created Esperanto, he would have been a remarkable man. And Esperanto was only a part of his work. He had this ideal which he in a certain period he called it Hillelism. Because he was a follower of the Rabbi Hillel, and he had a plan for understanding not only in language but also in religion, for human understanding at all levels. We remember him as a linguist who created a very useful and well thought language, but he was much more than that, and his great work, he said himself, was not Esperanto. The great work of his life was Hillelism, which he later called Homaranism. Homaranismo in Esperanto, humanism in a way. It's not a very good translation. But that was the great work of his life. It was Esperanto is a language, but it also has what we call in Esperanto la interna ideo, the inner idea, the inside idea. And the inside idea is much more than language understanding.
Going back to Zamenhof himself, can you tell us about his special work with Yiddish?
Yes. So actually, he wrote the first ever grammar of the Yiddish language, I believe. He published it in part in the Yiddish magazine Leben und Wissenschaft. I'm not sure how to translate it, how to pronounce it. But it was only the manuscript was only published in 1982. So it was an important work, but it only saw the light much later. Mm-hmm. And it appeared with an Esperanto translation. He not only provided a review of Yiddish grammar, but also proposed its transition to the Latin script and some other orthographic variations. And he wrote some other works in Yiddish.
It's interesting because, you know, for many years, Yiddish was not considered a real language. And so this could have been almost a vindication of Yiddish as a language, the fact that he did write a grammar of it, because a lot of people thought, well, Yiddish is just some dialect. It doesn't even have a grammar. A lot of people thought that.
Well, he himself, in his own letters, he called it sometimes, a jargon or something. But that was how they called it in those times. He really loved the language, of course, and worked a lot for it.
What are some works that he himself translated into Esperanto? You mentioned that the Yiddish grammar was translated into Esperanto. What else did he translate into Esperanto?
Well, we're running ahead a little over when he published his first Esperanto grammar, and it was successful, and people began to learn Esperanto, and someone wrote to him in Esperanto. But anyway, his work, apart from his original works in Esperanto, which are texts upon Esperanto grammar, various other subjects, he translated several works. I think the first one was The Battle of Life, which is a short novel by Charles Dickens. And then he translated works from Russian and German and Polish. I think he translated The Government Inspector by Gogol, and The Robbers by Schiller from German, and some plays by Goethe. And then he translated a novel by a Polish female writer, Eliza Osisko. I think it's I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's called Mata, which has a place in my heart. It was the first book I read in Esperanto. And also we read his translation of the Old Testament. The whole Bible is available in Esperanto, of course. Some have translated the Old Testament. The New Testament was translated by some team of Catholic Esperantists. And I would mention also rather an important translation, which we can call it translation, which is the Proverbaro Esperanta, the Esperanto collection of proverbs. Because Esperanto is such a complete language that it has its own proverbs, its own sayings, its own ways of speech. And Samenhof's father had created a collection of proverbs, sayings, ways of speech, taken from the literature or the traditions of many languages, including Spanish, I think. And Zamenhof had the vision to translate that, to provide Esperanto with a base of proverbs, sayings, expressions, metaphors. So that's one of the points that that made Esperanto great and successful.
That's really interesting, because proverbs and sayings are so often dependent on the culture that they come from, and they're very, very hard to translate. So that's really amazing.
So it is. And in fact, that gave Esperanto a culture. That's one of the steps that gave Esperanto its own culture, its own personality, because it has one.
And that's also interesting, because since Esperanto is spoken all over the world by people who come from different cultures, I think it's fascinating that it gives everybody something in common.
People tend to forget that work by Samenhof, but I read it a lot when I was learning the language.
Let's talk about the language itself then. Can you tell us where the grammar and the sound system came from and how it's written?
Well, the grammar of Esperanto, I would say it's like most Indo-European languages, but very simplified. It has no irregularities, no genders, no irregular verbs. So it's, if you can imagine, English grammar or even French grammar without the irregularities, but that would be hard to imagine. But it's also a bit agglutinative. It works by roots. You learn a number of roots, and you play with them like the pieces of a puzzle to create new words. And that makes it a very creative language. You can create new words, and not only you can create new words, but they are valid words. They are understandable, and people will understand you. So it's very flexible. So, and the grammar, well, some people say that Esperanto has 16 rules. There is a short work by Samenhof called Fundamento de Esperanto, the basis of Esperanto. And it's the main rules of Esperanto. It's about 2 pages. So people, and it's divided into 16 rules. Really, quite a bit more to speaking good Esperanto than that. But those are the basic rules that can never be changed. So, for instance, all nouns end with an O, all adjectives with an A, and so on. They're pretty simple, very simple rules.
Where does the vocabulary mostly come from and the sounds?
Some people say that it's a mixture of many languages, but the rule. Let's start with the sounds. The sounds are pretty close to Spanish sounds. It has the Spanish or the Italian vowels, and the usual consonants, and it's written in a way that to each a phoneme. There's a letter, each sound, should I say. There's a letter, so the spelling is absolutely logical. And the pronunciation, well, if you know Spanish, if you know, or if you know Italian, or even if you don't, you can learn to read Esperanto in a couple of hours. And the vocabulary, well, of course, they say that Esperanto is a bit European-centered or Western-centered. It really doesn't have many words or hardly any words from Chinese or from Eastern languages or from Indian languages or so on. But apart from that, the roots are generally, I would say the rule is taking the more universal, the more international root for a single word. So I have a microphone in front of me. What's the word for microphone? Microfono. Okay. So it's always the most, should say, understandable root for someone who knows a bit of Spanish, a bit of English, a bit of German, and a bit of Latin, will understand 90% of the roots or 95%.
About how many people in the world speak Esperanto? Do you have any idea?
That will be a bit hard to measure because there's levels of knowledge of the language. Some people say as many as 2 million. Some people say as few as 100,000. But I think the point is wherever you go, you find an Esperantist or 10 or 100 in a given country or large city.
Are there any parts of the world where there are more?
Well, there's plenty of Esperantists in Eastern Europe. There's quite a few of them, quite a lot of them in Western Europe, North America. There's plenty of them in United States. In Latin America, there's also quite a lot of them. Especially there's many in Brazil, because it's associated with a religion that's popular in Brazil, with spiritualism.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
And there's quite a few of them I know many in Japan. There's a lot of them in China. I've been interviewed in Esperanto by China Radio. And there's not that many in Africa, I think. But I knew a few of them. So,
aside from using it as, let's say, a lingua franca, if you go to another country, mm-hmm. are there any people who actually use it as their primary means of communication among themselves?
There's families that speak Esperanto at home. Especially people who are from different countries. If I know someone from Spain gets married with someone from Russia or China, and they're both Esperantists, they keep talking Esperanto. And many of them have children who speak Esperanto from the cradle.
Wow.
Yeah. I know more than one of them, and it's lovely. I mean, it's nice to speak Esperanto always, but to speak Esperanto with a four-year-old child, it's well. You can't compare it with anything. And there's also people who speak Esperanto with friends who have not any other language in common. I have friends from Russia. I don't speak a word of Russian. And I have old friends for many years with whom I speak only Esperanto. Same applies to Japanese. Well, I speak a little Japanese, but I mostly speak Esperanto with them. And so in that sense, it is a means of communication.
Do you think the interest in learning Esperanto is growing compared with in the past?
Well, Esperanto was particularly high, I would say, between the wars. But I think it went down a little after the World War II. It suffered a number of persecutions in Germany, Russia. But with the advent of internet, I've mentioned that internet, even to myself, was important in learning of Esperanto. And internet is helping a great deal because you can use it. I mean, you can live in a village with in which there's no other Esperantist other than you. It was my case. But you can chat, you can speak, you can write in Esperanto every day. So it's giving Esperanto a second life, I think.
Are there places where people can actually go to take classes, or do they have to kind of do it on their own?
Yes. Well, there's places in the internet. There's a place called learno.net. There's others. But there, in larger cities, there's, like Madrid, you can go, you can learn Esperanto. We organize courses in the Spanish Esperanto Federation, or people by themselves. I myself have led courses. I have been a teacher of Esperanto. And normally it's free. It's something that we do for free for our love of Esperanto.
What else does the association do?
The Spanish Esperanto Association, well, we publish books, we organize congress and seminars, and we represent Esperanto at the Spanish level. And the Spanish Esperanto Federation is not only an association of people who speak Esperanto, but it's also a kind of, well, that's what the word federation means in a way, as an association of Esperanto associations in Spain. And we normally organize the Congress each year. And we also have in Madrid a very valuable library, the Library Juan Regulo Pérez, with 3,000 books in Esperanto. Many of them are old books, very valuable. And some people are doing a really great work, making that readable online, creating the new, what they call in Esperanto, La Bitoteco. And that's, well, that's a great project.
What about the World Esperanto Association? Do you have any idea how many countries are members?
Let me see. According to my notes, it has members in 120 countries. That's pretty much all the large and medium, even small countries in the world. It was created in 1908 by Hodler and other followers of Zamenhof. And it now, the central office is in Rotterdam, has been there for quite a few decades now. And well, many people will remember the Universal, we'll call it the Universal Esperanto Association, but in our World Esperanto Association, many people will remember it as the organizer of the World Congress. The World Congress of Esperanto, which takes place every year, it's probably the most important meeting of Esperantists. It's a bit like the Olympic Games, because each year is in a different continent. So that's what most people would remember as the main work of the Esperanto Association. But they also publish some magazines, the Esperanto magazine and Contacto and others. And they also have a good book service. It's not so easy to buy books in Esperanto. You can't go into any bookshop and so you can, but you can have them online now. That's another important value of the net nowadays.
Would you say there's a lot of interest among young people, or is it kind of something that's getting old?
Yes, well, in Esperanto, there's a joke in Esperanto that we say that the mesaggio of Esperanto is growing, but that mesaggio is not mesaggio. It's not message. It's the average age. Mesaggio, the average age of Esperanto is growing. So we're getting older. But nowadays, I know many young Esperantists. There's a second wave, as I said before, a new generation of people who have learned Esperanto and use it in internet every day. And they travel a lot. There's world congresses and there's world youth congresses. And I've never been in a youth congress, but I understand they're fun, really fun, unmentionable fun sometimes. But yes, they have a great time, and I think it's not going to disappear anytime.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
Well, I would like to mention that even though the World Esperanto Federation is the most important association, there's others. I mean, you don't have to have a card to be of anything, or the World Federation of anything, to be Esperantist. The definition of Esperantist, I think Zamenhof himself said it, that it was someone who knows Esperanto and uses Esperanto. That's all. You don't have to be a member of the World Federation, of the World Association. There's also, I could mention, the Academia de Esperanto, the Esperanto Academy, which is a body of learned Esperantists who sort of define the language in their way, but it's like a Spanish academy. The people really don't pay much attention to what they say. the language is important enough. It's large enough. It has a large speaker base enough to grow, develop by the common consent of the users. And apart from the World Esperanto Association, I would mention, well, there's the local clubs. Those are the real spine of Esperanto. And then I would mention the Senatsietza Asociated Monda, SAT. It's a group that was created in the 1920s. Very important also. It's a left-leaning association of Esperantists. It's the people who want to use Esperanto for something, for the working class, for social work, for whatever. And I will also mention the real value of Esperanto is as a neutral language. I mean, English is my second language. Esperanto is my third. Well, they're pretty close. But I'm being interviewed now in English, and I don't feel so fluent as in Esperanto, because I'm not a native speaker of English. But if I was saying these same things in Esperanto, I'd really be more confident, because the other person who speaks Esperanto more or less like I do. Mm-hmm. Was maybe his second language, his third language, or whatever. But it's more egalitarian.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner @radiosefarad.com. See you next week.